This is The Wealthy Bookheads, where we interview important books that can change your life. I'll ask the questions, and I'll let the book do the talking using words from its own pages. This is essentially a book interview. Your time is valuable, so let's get started. Today, I'll be interviewing The Dark Side of the Light Chasers by Debbie Ford. It currently has an overall rating of 4.6 on Amazon, and 81% of the reviewers call it a 5-star book. Question number one, what's the book about? Most of us set out on the path to personal growth because at some point the burden of our pain becomes too much to bear. The Dark Side of the Light Chasers is about unmasking that aspect of ourselves which destroys our relationships, kills our spirit, and keeps us from fulfilling our dreams. It's about what the psychologist Carl Jung called the shadow. Question. What exactly is this shadow, or dark side, and why does it even matter? Jung first gave us the term shadow to refer to those parts of our personality that have been rejected out of fear, ignorance, shame, or lack of love. His basic notion of the shadow is simple. The shadow is the person you would rather not be. He believed that integrating the shadow would have a profound impact, enabling us to rediscover a deeper source of our own spiritual life. To do this, Jung said, we're obliged to struggle with evil, confront the shadow, to integrate the devil. There is no other choice. You've got to learn how to give all of who you are permission to exist. We must forgive ourselves for being human. Question. And this shadow work involves what exactly? The process is not about getting rid of things we dislike in ourselves, but about finding the positive side of these aspects and integrating them into our lives. Carl Jung once said, "One does not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious." The work will guide you on your way to unconcealing, owning, and embracing your shadow aspects. By doing so, you'll reclaim your power, your creativity, your brilliance, and your dreams. This work will open up your heart to yourself and others, and it will alter your relationship with the world forever. Question. In the book, you offer an overview of some common shadow traits, along with key questions to help expose our own darker side. Can you share these? The shadow wears many faces. Fearful, greedy, angry, vindictive, selfish, manipulative, lazy, controlling, hostile, ugly, undeserving, cheap, weak, critical. The list goes on and on. Our dark side acts as a storehouse for all of these unacceptable aspects of ourselves, all the things we pretend not to be, and all the aspects that embarrass us. These are the faces we don't want to show to the world, and the faces we don't want to show to ourselves. Whether you like it or not, if you're human, you have a shadow. If you can't see it, just ask the people in your family or the people you work with. They'll point it out to you. We think that our masks keep our inner selves hidden, but whatever we refuse to recognize about ourselves has a way of rearing its ugly head and making itself known when we least expect it. To get started exposing your own dark side, ask yourself the following series of questions and take time in listening to your inner voice. 1. What am I most afraid of? 2. What aspects of my life need transforming? 3. What do I want to accomplish by reading this book? 4. What am I most afraid of that someone else will find out about me? 5. What am I most afraid of finding out about myself? 6. What's the biggest lie I've ever told myself? 7. What's the biggest lie I've ever told someone else? Question. In addition to these questions, You devote a chapter to projection, which you say may be the only way to really know the traits of our shadow self. So what is projection? Our shadows are often hidden so well that it's nearly impossible to find them. If it weren't for the phenomenon of projection, they might stay hidden from us for a lifetime. Since we lie to ourselves about our own internal feelings, the only way we can find them is to see them in others. For example, if I'm offended by your arrogance, it may be because I'm not embracing my own arrogance. This is either arrogance that I'm now projecting, demonstrating in my own life and not seeing, or it's arrogance that I deny that I'm capable of demonstrating in the future. If I'm offended by arrogance, I need to look closely at all areas of my life and ask myself these questions. When have I been arrogant in the past? Am I being arrogant now? Could I be arrogant in the future? It would certainly be arrogant of me to answer no to these questions without looking at myself or without asking others if they have ever experienced my being arrogant. The act of judging someone else is arrogant, so obviously, all of us have the capacity to be arrogant. If I embrace my own arrogance, I won't be upset by someone else's. I might notice it, but it won't affect me. Question. There seems to be an important distinction between noticing a negative trait in others versus being affected by it. Can you elaborate on this difference? Ken Wilber makes this distinction in the book Meeting the Shadow. He says, projection on the ego level is very easily identified. If a person or thing in the environment informs us, we're probably not projecting. On the other hand, if it affects us, chances are that we're a victim of our own projections. If you truly understand this, you'll never see the world the same way again. At this point, many of you might be saying, "This is ridiculous. I don't want to find out I'm disgusting or arrogant." You have to remember there's a gift in each of these aspects, but in order to receive the gift, you first have to uncover, own, and embrace these aspects. For 1 week, just observe your own judgments about other people. Whenever you're upset by another person's behavior, write down the quality in him or her that you find most upsetting. Write down also any opinions you have of the people who are closest to you. Be sure to include your friends, family, and coworkers. This list marks the beginning of discovering your hidden aspects. You'll refer to it when you start the process of owning your shadow. Question. Beyond looking at others for what irritates or affects us in them, you suggest a technique that requires feedback from people and a lot of courage. What is it? My advice is to go out and interview people close to you, friends, lovers, family, colleagues. Ask them which three things they like the most about you and which three things they like the least. It's important for the people you're asking to know that it's okay for them to be honest. You're the only one who can make it safe for others to tell you the truth. Find out if you appear to others the way you appear to yourself. Other people often see more positive aspects in us than we see in ourselves, and at the same time, they see more negative traits than we see or admit to ourselves. We never have to believe what others think about us, but if we're afraid to hear what people closest to us have to say, we should take notice. Most people are afraid they'll hear what they fear most. This is denial at work. Think of denial as an acronym for "Don't even notice I'm lying." We only fear feedback if we know on some level that we've been lying to ourselves. Question. In the book, you describe still another method to expose our shadow, which involves testing how we respond to over 200 negative words or phrases. Can you describe this technique? You'll start with a list of negative words. The objective is to take a few minutes and identify any words that have an emotional charge for you. Say out loud, "I am blank." If you can say a word without any emotional charge, then move on to the next word. Write down the words that you dislike or react to. Ask yourself how you'd really feel if someone you respected called you this word. If you honestly feel what someone thinks about you has no basis in reality, you won't care. It won't affect you. If you'd be angry or upset at being called this word, write it down. The sampling of words may not be complimentary, but the question is, which ones cause the most emotional charge for you? Try it now. I am greedy. I am jealous. I am arrogant. Controlling. Hypocritical. Sensitive. Bitchy. Codependent. Disgusting. Unimportant. Emotional. Pompous. Offensive. Dumb. And so on. You may notice that not all these words affect you the same. We must uncover what's behind these words that cause an emotional charge in us so that we can then take back these disowned parts of ourselves. Question. What do you mean by take back these disowned parts of ourselves? And what's the procedure you use in your seminars to go about it? Once we have unconcealed all of our disowned aspects, we're ready to move on into the second stage of the process, which is to own all of these traits. By own, I mean acknowledge that a quality belongs to you. For example, at a certain point in my seminars, I ask everyone to write down the 5 words that are hardest for them to own. We then do a mirroring exercise with partners until each person no longer has any emotional charge on any of their 5 qualities. For example, if one of my charged words was incompetent, I would say, I am incompetent. And my partner, looking me in the eyes, would say, you are incompetent. I would then repeat, I am incompetent. And she would repeat, you are incompetent. This continues until it no longer matters to me if I am incompetent or if you call me incompetent. Just saying the word out loud, over and over, breaks down our resistance to being called that word and to having that quality. Question. So we're supposed to repeat a negative affirmation to break down our resistance. Why are we doing this again? I know this is a difficult concept for most people to accept. We're taught never to say negative things about ourselves. But the pain of our perceived flaws compels most of us to cover them up. When we deny certain aspects of ourselves, we overcompensate by becoming their opposite. A perfectionist who is prone to self-criticism, for example, may have a hidden fear of incompetence buried deep in the shadow, and this trait compels her obsessive behavior. In fact, we create entire personas to prove to ourselves and others that we are not that. But if we embrace it internally, we no longer have to be controlled by it externally. The solution is, as Carl Jung advised, to make the darkness conscious. Instead of trying to suppress our shadows, we need to unconceal, own, and embrace the very things we are most afraid of facing. Question. Let's move on to embracing the shadow. In the book, you write about a method to get past the ego in order to integrate these darker aspects of ourselves, as Jung advised. What's the general idea behind it? My first experience with subpersonalities was in a transpersonal psychology class at JFK University. Every week, we would learn and actually experience a different model of emotional healing. The week on psychosynthesis altered my life. Behind our social masks lurk thousands of faces. Each face has a personality of its own. Each personality has its own unique characteristics. Examining our subpersonalities can be a tool to help us reclaim the lost parts of ourselves. When you embrace the messages of each aspect of your shadow, you begin to take back the power you've given to others and form a bond of trust with your authentic self. These shadow qualities, when allowed into your consciousness, will bring you back into balance and harmony with your natural rhythms. Question. And how exactly can using psychosynthesis help us to embrace the shadow. The process goes like this. If I take one of my traits which I don't like, for example, being whiny, and then name it Whiny Wanda, it suddenly seems less threatening to me. I can then stand back and look at my traits in an objective way. I can then examine different aspects of myself, my subpersonalities, and begin to find out who they are and what they need to be whole. Examples of subpersonalities within me are resistant Rita, angry Alice, controlling Carrie, righteous Renee, and so on. My goal is to find their gifts, of course, and in finding each gift, I find acceptance of a disowned shadow part of myself. When we identify these parts and then name them, we'll be far more able to disengage from them. Actually, naming them creates the distance. This process starts to loosen the grip of these behaviors over our lives. Question. So, big picture. Shadow work involves identifying hidden traits, naming them, and then integrating them into our concept of self. What do you say to people who want to change their lives but don't want to do all of this shadow work? After years of working with people, I have discovered that many people like to talk about change but are unwilling to let go of behaviors that keep them stuck in negative patterns. Shadow work can change these stubborn negative patterns. For example, I have a friend who is at least 100 pounds overweight. He constantly tells me how he eats well and that his diet's not the problem. In a sense, he's right. Food is not the problem. The problem is that he lies to himself about his eating habits. He's a food addict, and he's unwilling to acknowledge it and go for help. He's unaware that food addict Freddy is lurking in his shadow. If you're really committed to losing weight, then discovering you're a food addict is a blessing. It's a necessary step in the process of achieving your goal. But if you believe that you don't have an eating problem and that you just have poor metabolism, it'll be very difficult to achieve your desire to lose weight. You first need to bring your darkness into the light, as Carl Jung said. Question. In closing, do you have any final words for the reader? The reason for doing shadow work is to become whole, to end our suffering, to stop hiding ourselves from ourselves. Once we do this, we can stop hiding from the rest of the world. We live under the impression that in order for something to be divine, it has to be perfect. We are mistaken. In fact, the exact opposite is true. To be divine is to be whole, and to be whole is to be everything, the positive and the negative, the good and the bad, the holy man and the devil. When we take the time to discover our shadow and its gifts, we will then understand what Jung meant when he said, "The gold is in the dark." Each of us needs to find that gold in order to reunite with our sacred self. And finally, my favorite quotes from the book are as follows. The shadow is the person you would rather not be. Whether you like it or not, if you're human, you have a shadow. Our shadows are often so hidden so well that it's nearly impossible to find them. What you don't own, owns you. Think of denial as an acronym for Don't Even Notice I Am Lying. We need to unconceal, own, and embrace the very things that we're most afraid of facing. Shadow work can change stubborn negative patterns. You need to bring your darkness into the light. Your life will be transformed when you make peace with your shadow. And that's it for this book interview with The Dark Side of the Light Chasers by Debbie Ford. You've been listening to The Wealthy Bookheads, where we interview important books that can change your life. You can order this book in the links below or on our website if you'd like to support our cause. It puts a few pennies in our pockets without taking any extra pennies from yours. As always, thank you for your time.